I want to start today's lesson with a question or two, okay? So this will be fun. What if you had to choose, and you have to, have you ever played that game, Would You Rather? We're doing that right now. Would you rather, if you had to, there's no deferring to, you know, neutral on this. What if you had to either give up one of two things? Give up your cell phone or your kidney? Ooh. You're laughing because that's a tough choose for you, isn't it? Huh? Some of you guys are like, I don't know. Let me think about that. I have to pray and fast for a while. I have another question for you. What if you had to choose between living the rest of your life with either a hemispherectomy? Yeah, I know. A hemispherectomy is a surgical procedure where they take out half of your brain. It's a real thing. So would you rather live the rest of your life with half a brain or worthless internet? Holy, you guys are like, oh, these are really hard questions. Some of you guys, you might have a hard time with that, and I'm teasing a little bit here because I think that technology has really got us kind of wrapped around its proverbial pinky. You know what I mean? We're kind of like, think back to the day when you didn't have a cell phone and all that your cell phone does for you, okay? Let your mind go back. Imagine if you will. Right? Like, think back to when you didn't have a cell phone, which means you didn't have instant messaging, you didn't have camera to capture all of the, you know, videos, no, you know, instant YouTube or Google, you didn't have apps and games to play with and entertain you all hours of the day, you didn't have to be constantly checking in with this thing, you didn't have mobile music, I mean, you can bring an orchestra with you anywhere. I mean, imagine your life before all of those conveniences, okay? Imagine if you had to go back to that life now after having tasted it, and imagine how perhaps scared and desperate and disconnected and alone and helpless and stupid and empty and inept you'd feel. Okay? So imagine if you will. Going back to that kind of a life. Now, here's what's cool about Psalm 25. It kind of transports us back in time, nearly 3,000 years ago, to when people didn't have the internet. And when we look at these Psalms, we get to kind of see what spirituality looked like before technology hijacked it. And when I say that technology has sort of hijacked spirituality, I really think it kind of has. Because a lot of us today are getting our spiritual education online. And some of it is devastatingly dangerous, and some of it you'd think is pretty awesome, but even that isn't what it should be. Okay? Some of you, you're getting your doctrine from like YouTube and Google and all these freaky blog posts and everybody giving their opinions and philosophies and spiritual pontification. And sometimes you add your two cents into the thing and you really think you're growing spiritually and edgy, you know, like. And then some of you, well, I won't say some of you, I don't want to accuse you of this, but a lot of Christians, I think today, are living the church life vicariously through an online preacher. A really awesome online preacher, like an online preacher that puts their stuff on there diligently and then they soak up all of this really good doctrinal stuff, but they don't go to church. They're being cheated. Like, they're getting good theology, they're getting good education, but it's kind of like stunted because it's incomplete. And so I think technology has done a real sort of hijacking or it's really interfered with the spiritual growth of a lot of people. So here's what I like about Psalms. It takes us back 3,000 years before they had such thing as internet, all right? So here's what we're going to do is read a few verses and I'll comment on that. Starting in verse 1, here's David's words. He says, "To you, O Lord, I lift up my soul. Oh my God, I trust in you. Let me not be ashamed. Let not my enemies triumph over me. Indeed, let no one who waits on you be ashamed. Let those be ashamed who deal treacherously without cause." These first three verses, we're getting a glimpse now into the days before we each had our own cell phone. And all the things that our cell phone kind of does for us. occupies our time, which, by the way, some people's cell phones really occupy a lot of their time. It pacifies people. And I'm not saying all of us. I'm not teaching this message like this for any other reason than that it's kind of a creative approach, and I'm hoping to keep you awake. I'm not accusing everybody in here of being addicted to technology or like really having your cell phones become an idol, but just think about it this way. What does technology and these things do for you? Well, for a lot of people, it occupies vast amounts of their time. For some people, it's kind of like a grown-up pacifier. You know what I mean? It's your binky. You wouldn't know what to do without it, but cry. For some people, it's their source of entertainment. Some people, it's their source of instruction. It informs you. Some of us, it's a comfort. Like, have you ever forgot your cell phone? Like, you're driving to work, you get 3 blocks away, and you're like, oh, no! But, you know, you cut it so close to the wire in terms of how much time it takes to get to work, you don't have enough time to turn around 3 blocks and go get it. So you're like, oh, no, I guess I'm going to have to do without my cell phone today. And you just feel like anything could happen. Like, what if I ran out of gas? Like, yeah, okay. What if I run out of gas? What if I, like, seriously, what if you would have done both at the same time? Forgot your cell phone and run out of gas. What if something terrible happens? What if the car breaks down? What if, you know, like, what if I need to order a pizza? You feel helpless. It's a source of comfort. Some people use internet to find an online mate. Isn't that sad? Like, you would use Google, right? Or like Dates R Us, or whatever Christian Mingle, you know, because, well, it's Christian, so it's kosher. Okay, so long before the days of cell phones and internet, people had to rely on this thing called God. And it was a really weird day back then because, you know, God was really all that they had. Now, of course, there were several different versions of this God. Like, there was one that was really good. And then, of course, there was a whole bunch of like cheap spin-offs to choose from. But back in that day, they didn't have like instant answers. They had to rely on God for answers. And sometimes those answers didn't come as speedily for those folks as they do for you and I on Google. You know what I mean? And so here we have David just like crying out to God, saying, "To you, Lord, I lift up my soul. In you, God, I trust." Okay? And you see David here relying on God. And that's not such a bad thing. Because God, much like our cell phone does now, God, back in the day, would help people connect with other human beings, right? Kind of like a cell phone. God has a way of connecting people, bringing us together for communion, if you will. God brings us into relationship with each other, kind of like a cell phone does. He promotes communication with each other, kind of like a cell phone does. So God was what people used back in the day to find answers to life before they were able to consult Siri. Anybody know who Siri is? All right, then you know what I'm talking about. Now, David says, "I lift up my soul to you. I trust in you." And of course, he's talking to God. So David was unfortunate, I guess, to live in a day when God was all that he had. So Siri wasn't around yet to fix his problems. When he had questions, poor David was at the mercy of God. Now, some of us, that's really hard for us. And you may not have Siri, you know, you may not consult with Google. You're a Christian, so you do your best to consult God, but sometimes God takes longer to respond than we have patience for, right? And I'm telling you that can get you into some major, major trouble. We live in an instant messaging, drive-through, microwavable, I want it now, instant world. And God doesn't work that way. God is all we've got as Christians. I'm not saying we don't have access to false gods. We certainly do. You can get your answers quicker if you'd like. I mean, if nobody likes waiting on God, well, there's 1,000 different voices out there that all want to weigh in on whatever it is that you're considering and kind of give you the answers you want now. And we also know that if we want answers quicker, we know who to go to get those answers when God's not quick enough for us. So here's David. He's in trouble. We don't know why he's in trouble, but he was. Okay? I mean, we've only gone through 25 of, what, 150 Psalms? And a lot of these that David has written kind of seems like he's freaking out about something. I get that idea in this one, too. I didn't do a whole lot of research to find out what this psalm was connected to in the life of David, but I don't have to. It just seems like he's in trouble again. It's not an uncommon thing for David. So I don't know why he's in trouble. We just know that he kind of like seems to be in trouble. Nor is it uncommon to see David, when he's in trouble, checking in with God. That's been a common theme throughout the first 25 of these here. Okay. Nor is it uncommon for people nowadays to check in with Siri, you know, Google, internet, in times of trouble. We want answers quick, that's all. And I'm telling you that God doesn't work that way. And David is at the mercy of a God who just doesn't work quick enough. If you look at verses 4 and 5, show me your ways, O Lord, teach me your paths. Lead me in your truth and teach me, for you are the God of my salvation. On you I wait all the day. On you I wait all day. David is desperate for answers, and the answers aren't coming quick enough. Sometimes it takes all day. When he says, I wait all day, that's kind of metaphoric for, I'll wait as long as it takes. Like, God, you're buffering, I'll wait. Waiting for the... Do you guys ever have that? Does this image bug anybody? Yeah. Because when you see it on your computer for too long, doesn't it just... is there anything that angers you more than that? That symbol, it's called a throbber, by the way. I looked it up, and I'm just like, what is that thing called? There's different names for it, but I'm just like, I hate that thing. And apparently, a lot of other people hate that thing, too. And when I say waiting for it too long, I mean like 30 or 40 seconds tops. And here's David going, I might have to wait all day, which is proverbial for I might have to wait as long as it takes, which means days, weeks, months. I hate to say it, but years? I mean, God, hello, buffer, hello, Lord. It's like, if that was my computer, you know, you techies, it's like, do you ever want to just put your fist through the screen? It's like, maybe that's just a non-techie thing. Maybe techies have that kind of brain that's like, they can wait, I'm buffered, they see it all day, it's no problem. But for me, I'm not like that. I'm like, ugh. And some of us, we're kind of like that with God. He doesn't answer fast enough. We're like, then I'm going to go somewhere else. Trash this computer. I need one that works. Right? Trash this God. I need something that can give answers. And I'm not saying you go to your cell phone or you go to Google or anything technological. There's a million different things that we might go to for immediate gratification, if that's what you want to call it. Immediate answers. Maybe we'll jump ahead of God and go and grab a hold of the thing that we've been asking for, but He isn't quick to give. We're sick of waiting. We're tired of this game that he's playing with us, or we think he's playing. And so we just jump on ahead. Problem with that is that the Bible tells us that for God, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So if that bothers you, boy, brace yourself. Could you look at that? You can't look at that thing for 30, 40 seconds. Could you look at that thing for 1,000 years? David's like, I wait on you all the day, which in God time is 1,000 years. Or anywhere in between. How long would you wait for an answer? How long do you wait for answers? I mean, do you have a time limit? Because I'm telling you, it's excruciating to wait when you believe that you need an answer now. Now. God, do you not understand how trying this is? And God's like, that's why I'm buffering. See, you need to be tried. You need to be tested. This is intentional. It's not like God needs more RAM. Like, if I could just, you know, like, God, you're insufficient. If I could just, you know, beef you up a little bit and get you working a little quicker. God's like, no. No, I do this on purpose to you. Does that bother you that God would do that on purpose to you? Because, I don't know. Is it bad to say it bothers me? I shouldn't even say that. But I think it does. I think it bothers people. I think it bothers David. I mean, when I read the Psalms, I see a man crying out to God because he's bothered on how long it takes God to respond. I'll give you a couple of examples. David wrote Psalm 13. We already studied that. If you remember verse 1, this is David. How long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me? Okay, that's one of them. There's a couple more. I'll get to those in a second. But doesn't it sound like he's kind of like freaked out? Doesn't it sound like he's kind of desperate? I mean, doesn't it sound... You can't read tone into words alone. But if there was tone there, I'm guessing David is like really, really pressed. That's Psalm 13. David also wrote Psalm 69. And if you go to the third verse there, here's what he says there. I'm exhausted from crying for help. My throat is parched. I just added that. My eyes are swollen with weeping, waiting for my God to help me. Okay. Pause. Because I have another one, but hold on. Doesn't that sound like a guy who's just like really having difficulty waiting for God to buffer? Doesn't it? Okay. Again, I'm not reading tone into it, but geez, if I had to. Okay, and then here's another one. It's Psalm 119, verse 82. David again. He says, my eyes are straining to see your promises come true. When will you comfort me? Do you ever feel like that? Like, God, rah! Come on already! I'm crying, can't you see it? I'm running out of breath! I can't pray anymore! Let's go already! And God's like, drives you nuts. Drives you nuts. David has been driven nuts in waiting for God more than once. And this is one of them. I will wait all the day. I might wait for weeks. It might be months. And God help me if it's years. In verse 6, he says, remember, O Lord, your tender mercies and your loving kindnesses, for they are from of old. Do not remember the sins of my youth, nor my transgressions. According to your mercy, remember me for your goodness's sake, O Lord. Now, the thing that makes God more attractive than Cortana or Siri, you know those two? Those two internet chicks? I don't even know what they are. It's just like a weird programmed voice, right? Am I right? Okay. Here's what makes God more attractive than them is that God is more than a voice. Okay? The God that we have is a person with a personality. That's nice. Does Cortana have a personality? Only one that you might ascribe to her in your own little silly imagination, but as far as I know, I mean, who's she designed after? Our God doesn't interact with us according to a pre-programmed script, but according to his character, actually, according to who he is in relation to who you are. In other words, you can't have a personal relationship with Siri through your phone like you can with God through Christ. Isn't that nice? You can have a personal relationship with God through Christ. Personal. Because God's a person and he has character just like you have character, so that's kind of a good match. Kind of works out nicely. And so David here in these two verses is making his appeal based upon God's character, his personal attributes, specifically of love, loving kindness, and mercy, because that's God. Now what if you asked Siri to deal with you according to her tender mercies and her loving kindness? You have Siri, don't you? Do you? You have Siri? See, I thought, how fun would it be to just ask Siri that? Hey, Siri, will you deal with me according to your loving kindness and your tender mercies? I wonder what she'd have to say. I mean, it'd be almost be a good experiment. I don't use that, so I'm wondering, would that just totally confuse her? Would she be like, I don't know what you mean? You know, what if you asked Siri to promise not to remember the sins of your youth? Does Siri know what you did when you were a kid? She keeping track? Because that's creepy if she is, right? That's freaking creepy. Was she even around when you were a kid? She didn't exist. And she doesn't keep track. Why? Because Apple doesn't care. God, however, does. God watches. He is concerned. He is loving. And He can demonstrate mercy. Reading on in verse 8, David says, "Good and upright is the Lord. Therefore, He teaches sinners in the way. The humble He guides in justice, and the humble He teaches His way. All the paths of the Lord are mercy and truth to such as keep His covenant and His testimonies. For Your name's sake, O Lord, pardon my iniquity, for it is great. Who is the man that fears the Lord? Him shall He teach in the way that He chooses." Interesting thing, when you compare technology with God, I'm not picking on technology for any particular reason tonight, but your cell phone doesn't require anything of you other than that you pay money to keep it alive. That's all it needs. You pay your bill, and then it works for you. It doesn't require anything of your character in order for it to respond. You know what I mean? Like when you Google something, it doesn't go, "Are you humble? Because if you're not, forget it, I'm out." Right? "Do you fear me? Well, come back another day." Right? Google works just as well for people in the childcare field as it does for serial killers. Google doesn't discriminate. It's the same for everybody. But God does discriminate. You're like, "That's so not cool." Well, why not? Can't God do what He wants? And when I say discriminate, I don't mean He discriminates based on race or ethnicity or anything like that. I'm saying that He discriminates based on character. Because in these verses here, it's telling us that God guides the humble. And God teaches the humble in verse 9. In verse 12, it says that God teaches those who fear Him. See, there aren't many gods out there that we could seek this evening that are going to discriminate in that way. And maybe that's why we're so drawn to, case in point, modern technology or other sources of help and relief and whatever else we're after. See, David, again, he was at a disadvantage because in his day, God was all that he had. And God required humility of him and fear in order to get the answers that he was after. Going on, David says, "He himself shall dwell in prosperity." This is the individual that seeks God and is taught by God and led by God because this individual has humility and fear for God. "He himself shall dwell in prosperity, and his descendants shall inherit the earth. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear him, and he will show him his covenant." Let me just go through these verses. See, going to God for answers, though it's inconvenient, and though it may take a little bit more effort and time than we'd like, and though it requires something of your character, going to God for answers actually has its advantages, and I think that they're listed in these verses here. The first one, those who go to God for answers will dwell in prosperity. That's verse 13. That's pretty decent. Like if you go to God for answers and you wait on Him and you listen to Him and you get your guidance from Him, you're promised prosperity. Who wouldn't want that? Who's like, "Prosperity? No thanks." And by the way, the word prosperity there actually literally means beautiful. It means beauty, not rich. So don't get it confused with rich. You're promised a beautiful life. And God can make poverty beautiful. God can make persecution beautiful. God can make beauty from ashes, the Bible says. He can make anything beautiful. Therefore, be careful of rejecting poverty and persecution and ridicule and sorrow and all of those things as something that God could not use, because oftentimes God will work that into the life of a Christian in order to bring the beauty or the prosperity that He actually promised. We already went through this just recently on Sundays. God chooses to bless those who mourn. Blessed are you when you're persecuted. Remember this? Blessed are those who are poor in this life. Remember that? Why? Because your life is beautiful. God can make a beautiful life out of riches or poverty, happiness or sorrow. God making something beautiful isn't at the mercy of the condition of the thing He's trying to work with. God can make whatever beautiful He wants to make beautiful. Whatever. God can make a beautiful thing out of death. Did you know that? Isn't that kind of like the central theme of the entire scriptures? Is this beautiful sacrificial death that we all worship the victim of? You know what I mean? Like we're all about death, right? Because it's such a beautiful thing, right? Because God wrote such beauty into such a horrible method of execution, right? Like crucifixion, but salvation came out of that. Like ugly, but beautiful. God promises this for those who will wait on Him. God promises prosperity, beauty in the life of those who wait for Him to buffer. But that's not all. Prosperity, look at the last half of verse 13. And His descendants shall inherit the earth. That's sweet. To me, who do I want to inherit the earth? My descendants, if I had to pick. The people I'm closest with, the people that are related to me, whether that be biologically or spiritually, like you guys, if anybody just like won the lottery and the jackpot happened to be the world, who would I hope won that lottery? Us, you guys. I'd rather you than strangers. Why? Because you mean something to me. You're close to me. And the Bible guarantees me here that if I will wait on the Lord and get my leadership and guidance and instruction from Him, that that's how things are going to actually pan out. We together inherit the earth. And by the way, this isn't the only place in Scripture that would indicate such. We will have a beautiful life. We will inherit the earth. The Bible says here that we will know the secrets of the Lord. Look at verse 14. The secret of the Lord is with those who fear Him. And He will show them His covenant. Like that's the secrets of the Lord. All right, I'll go with that. Like what that means is that we'll have spiritual understanding that not everybody else has. I'll take it. Sounds all right with me. 1 Corinthians chapter 2 speaks into this idea when it says, "But it was to us that God revealed these things by His Spirit. For His Spirit searches out everything and shows us God's deep secrets. No one can know a person's thoughts except that person's own spirit, and no one can know God's thoughts except God's own spirit. And we have received God's Spirit so we can know the wonderful things God has freely given us. But people who aren't spiritual can't receive these truths from God's Spirit. It all sounds foolish to them, and they can't understand it. For only those who are spiritual can understand what the Spirit means. But we understand these things, for we have the mind of Christ." It's pretty simple. Here 3,000 years ago, people are being promised that if they will trust on the Lord and wait upon Him, that they will receive the mind of Christ through the Holy Spirit who searches the mind of God and discloses that to us. That's nice. Not everybody has that. Bible's clear. Also, we get safety and security. He says in verse 15, "My eyes are ever toward the Lord, for He shall pluck my feet out of the net." Now, I don't know if I'm reading too far into this or not, but when I hear David use those words, "God will pluck my feet out of the net," that means David walked into the net. Right? It's not like this net was thrown over the top of David unsuspectingly, like, oh no, he walked into it. So he walks in, he gets himself in trouble, and he says, but because I wait on the Lord, he will get me out of the trouble. He will protect me from the trouble that I sometimes get myself into. And that's a pretty good deal. Because you guys, we do that, don't we? We still like, well, yeah, I'm a perfect Christian. That never happens to me. Yeah, right. You walk into it deliberately sometimes. You get yourself in trouble. The net's not thrown over the top of you. It's underneath you. You walk into it and it closes around you. You just weren't paying attention to where you were going. You were getting careless about your walk. And David goes, that's me sometimes. But here's a good thing about God. He's better than the internet because he can get me out of trouble that I get myself into. In verse 16, he says, turn yourself to me and have mercy on me, for I am desolate and afflicted. The troubles of my heart have enlarged. Bring me out of my distresses. Look on my affliction and my pain, and forgive all my sins. Consider my enemies, for they are many, and they hate me with cruel hatred. Keep my soul and deliver me. Let me not be ashamed, for I put my trust in you. So David, he didn't have access to a God that was, you know, real quick with answers sometimes. Now, but I don't know much about the false gods in his day, but I have to wonder if there weren't perhaps false gods available that would have promised a speedier response. And I'm only venturing to guess because Satan seems to be that kind of a guy that would really work in the world to create false gods that people could go to for quick answers. I think drugs are one of them. You need quick help? Snort it. You want some speedy relief? Drink it. Okay? I think they're all over the place. I think they had quicker gods back in that day. But David chose the Lord. And here we have David saying things like, I'm desolate, I'm afflicted, I'm troubled, distressed, hurt, and hated. Okay? Those are words that describe a life that I don't think any one of us in here would choose to live if we had the option. Distressed, desolate, afflicted, troubled, hurt, and hated. This dude is desperate. He needs answers. He needs help. He needs comfort. This guy needs attention. And yet, in spite of all of this, his sights are set on God. None of the idols, none of the false gods, none of the liars there that would have spoken false comfort to him. And he plans on waiting as long as it takes to get his answers. He will wait all day, if that's what it means. Where do you go when you're at your lowest? I don't think David's got much going for him at all here. That whole list of hated and hurting and desolate and distressed and afflicted, he's at the bottom. I mean, if you asked him, I bet he'd say, I can't take any more. I can't take any more. I'm at my breaking point. And yet he's waiting. He's waiting for God to hurry up and provide him with the help that he's been seeking. Who knows how long he's been waiting at the point that he writes Psalm 25. Maybe it had been all day already. Maybe it had been all week. Maybe it had been months of spiritual dryness, and he's finally going, I don't know what to do, but wait. I'm broken. In verse 21, he says, let integrity and uprightness preserve me, for I wait on you. David's life is preserved, guarded by his integrity and his uprightness. Why? How does that work? Well, he's waiting for God to buffer, as we've said, and if he doesn't have integrity, what's going to happen is he's going to grow impatient, like a lot of others have, including Saul, and he's going to make a foolish move that corrupts his character and tarnishes his reputation for good, strips him of his position, and gives everything that God has given him to somebody else. See, David doesn't want that to happen. He doesn't want to be impatient because he knows what impatience will bring him. I want you guys to turn to 1 Samuel chapter 13. And starting in verse 8, and this is a part of Scripture that gives us a bit of detail in a situation that occurred long before David ever sat down to write Psalm 25. It actually happens when Saul is still king. In verse 8, speaking of Saul, it says that he waited 7 days according to the time set by Samuel, but Samuel didn't come to Gilgal, and the people were scattering from him. So Saul said, "Bring a burnt offering and peace offering here to me." And he offered the burnt offering. Now it happened as soon as he finished presenting the burnt offering that Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might greet him. And Samuel said, "What have you done?" Saul said, "Well, when I saw the people were scattering from me and that you didn't come within the days appointed and that the Philistines gathered together, then I said, well, the Philistines are now going to come down on me at Gilgal and I haven't made supplication to the Lord. Therefore, I felt compelled and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said to Saul, "You have done foolishly. You haven't kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but now your kingdom will not continue. The Lord has sought for himself a man after his own heart. And the Lord has commanded him to be commander over his people, because you have not kept what the Lord commanded you." Who is that man after God's own heart? Anybody know? It's David. David was given the kingdom because his predecessor didn't have the patience to wait on the Lord. That's why I believe David, in so many cases, is like, "I have to wait. As terrible as this is, as much as it makes me cry, as parched as my throat has become with all of my praying, I can't let myself get ahead of God. I saw how bad this works for everybody else, and I don't want God to strip the kingdom from me and give it to somebody else. So if I want my life to turn out beautiful, I had better practice patience." If it's true for David, then it's true for you. Do you get that? You want a beautiful life? Then you must demonstrate excruciating patience. Patience until it hurts. You want it so badly, you want it now, and God's buffering. And you're like, "I can't handle buffering." And so what happens is you spring ahead of God, and you go and secure for yourself that thing which you wanted so badly, and then your life gets ugly. Because ugly is the opposite of beautiful. And beautiful is what happens when you wait for the Lord. Ugly is what happens when you don't. And some of you, listen, some of you, I hate to say this, but I bet it's true. Some of you will live an ugly life. You're destined for ugliness. Because when it comes to spiritual things, you're impatient. When it comes to big matters in life, you won't wait for God. I'm sorry to say it, but there will be some Sauls. Even in 2016. But for those of us who will wait on the Lord, there will be some Davids. Though you walk into the occasional net, God will rescue you from that. But if your impatience causes you to seek other means by which you can get what you want out of life when you want it, then all bets are off. God didn't pluck Saul's feet from the net, did he? In verse 22, David finishes his song with these words, and they're significant. "Redeem Israel, O God, out of all their troubles." Okay, so for 21 verses, okay, David's been really crying out of the depth of his own heart for himself. Okay, he's waiting on God, looking to the Lord for guidance and instruction, but at the very end, he turns it out and says, "God, do this for everyone in my country, everyone in my jurisdiction, everyone in my flock." So I, as the pastor of this church, can do my best to wait on the Lord, but that I don't want this to be a, you know, one-man show. I want this for all of you. I want all of you to see the beauty of a life that's spent waiting on the Lord to let it unfold naturally and in His timing. That's what I want. So if you end up becoming one of those impulsive people who's really, you know, pulling at the reins and trying to get God to move faster than He is willing, and then you come along and you want my insight, and I don't match your impulsive desires, then you're not going to like it. But you have to understand that the counsel that I give is given because I want you to have the most beautiful life that you can possibly have. And sometimes I think that that for you means waiting, slowing down, slowing your roll. Americans got to be some of the most impulsive people on the planet. I mean, we live in a pretty fast-paced society, don't we? We got to have it immediately. And worse yet, we've been indoctrinated by our own culture to believe that we deserve it immediately. No, you don't. If God thought you deserved it, He wouldn't buffer so long, but as it sits, He just takes His time. David is hopeful that others would have this life of great beauty as well. Unlike cell phones and internet, God's available to everybody. You might not be able to afford the greatest cell phone plan, or you might not have the quickest computer or the most RAM, or you might have, listen, you might not have those things, but I will tell you that you do have access to God. God's accessible to everybody and anybody who is willing to patiently follow His direction. All other gods have limited accessibility. All of them. You worship money? What are you going to do when money runs out? And maybe your money never runs out, but think of it this way. If you worship money, you have limited access to your God because money's limited and other people have some. And that's not yours and you can't take it. So your God is distributed among many and you only have a fraction. Like what about people like in other cultures and stuff that worship the sun? Like, you know, there's all kinds of gods. What do you do at night? Your God goes away from you. I mean, how can you sleep? Your God just abandoned you. He ain't coming back for like another 8 to 12 hours. You know, like what do you do if you're stuck at the pole? Like there's some crazy people that live at the North and South Pole. What do you do for like 6 months out of the year when your God's like, I'm done with you. I'm going to these folks. You want to worship a God like that with limited accessibility? What if you worship a person? A lot of us are guilty of that. You ever tried it? It sucks. I've tried it. It sucks. Try and worship a person. What do you do when they die or you die and you can't take them with you? Death will eventually separate you from that God. Every other God has limited accessibility except for the Creator God, Jehovah, Almighty King and Ruler. He's the one all human beings have access to. You have access to Him. As a Christian, we are going to be faced. If you're a Christian, you are faced with the excruciating task of waiting for God to buffer. That's all. How will you react when He's slow? Just something to think about. When you think of Psalm 25, ask yourself, how long would I wait for God? How long would I wait for a sure answer before I step forward? How long would I wait for clarity on an issue before I make a big move? Would you wait until you cry? Would you wait until it hurts so bad you thought you were going to break, go nuts? David's like, yes, 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 and yes, and yes, at least four times that I've recorded, probably more.